Webcasting to the world live the good news of God's righteousness for all humanity. This is the Gospel Revolution Radio Network. Greetings, you beautiful humans. This is Glenn Klein online. It's hump day, Wednesday, February 18th, 2009. The only February 18th, 2009 in the history of the world. Welcome in on this midweek edition of Glenn Klein Online. Glad to have you along with us. For those of you that are listening live, you are alive, 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 alive forevermore.
My Jesus is alive, alive forevermore. Oh, it's not my turn yet.
Well, I guess it is. So without any further ado, let's introduce the other member of the choir. From the home offices of the Gospel Revolution in beautiful Houston, Texas, Mr. Michael Williams, singing Michael.
Yes, Glenn, and it is a beautiful day in Houston today. We are in full springtime here, which I know for anybody more than 2 hours north of Houston and further, they may not believe that, but...
Well, pitchers and catchers are reporting for baseball, so it's that time of the year, and Unless you're Alex Rodriguez and embroiled in a steroids controversy, you know that. I'm sure you've been following that on the news. You can't avoid it.
I've heard it. Yes.
Yeah, and you know it really speaks to the whole issue of law.
Yeah.
And you know, he had a news conference yesterday, which lasted all of 33 minutes. Didn't take up any follow-up questions, and. You know, why they can't just have full disclosure, and it's a bigger picture than just baseball and drugs. It speaks to our entire society's just hang-up, major hang-up with pharmaceuticals. I mean, you talk about a policy that is completely messed up, and especially in these economic times, for us to be spending any law enforcement resources on arresting people for doing things that doctors can prescribe medications much stronger and much more damaging, not to mention the going down to the local pub. And, we got a big problem, and it really does speak to the whole issue of law versus freedom.
Well, it certainly does. I've mentioned it before, and we'll quote it many, many times, I'm sure, yet to come. And that is my friend John Hall, you won't hear this at all because there's only 30-year veterans of the FBI, but John was actually a 32-year veteran of the FBI, held over because of 9/11. And in the FBI, you serve exactly 30 years, and that's it. You are out. And I remember having a discussion with John. He and his wife embraced the gospel, and it was as much affirming as it was transforming for them. And of course, he was John was the he taught law at the FBI. So every FBI agent who went through the FBI training was taught law by John Hall. And he and I were talking about this issue of the laws that we have in society and the issues of grace and the gospel, and we were talking about the crime rate and things like that, and people who had committed very aggressive crimes where they killed people indiscriminately as compared to crimes of passion. And there was a lot of subjects that came up. When you have somebody like that around that knows what they're talking about, you talk about all you can and get all the answers you can. And I mentioned something about the crime rate in America and how much it had gone up since the 50s. And he was very quick to say that the crime rate did not go up. He said the number of laws increased.
Right.
And brought my attention to the fact that before the 50s, there was no such thing as drug laws. And that only started in the 50s, and that people are in jail now for what wasn't even a law for the vast majority of the history of this country. So, you know, it's a difficult thing. I know that they want to create the laws to stop the trafficking, but actually the only thing they do is create trafficking.
Right. The only people that make money off the war on some drugs is the drug lords and the DEA, the Drug Enforcement Agency.
Yeah, it really is true. Now, what the solution to all of that is, I don't claim to be
we know prohibition doesn't work.
Yes, and that we've learned very clearly. But how you get the government uninvolved in something like that, you know, how do you get the law out of something like that? And because people's consciousness for their conscience of right and wrong is so huge that to think of not having drug laws is, as they would say about the gospel, it is to introduce chaos and to create irresponsibility, when it seems as though that chaos and irresponsibility has grown with the laws. I mean, the laws certainly didn't decrease.
Especially in these economic times where this stuff could be, the money is being spent and leaves the country without being taxed. And our system is so messed up. It kind of reminds me of the church. you would be able to fund the national debt just by legalizing and taxing marijuana. They have, of course, marijuana is legal in the Netherlands, and the incidence of teenage marijuana use is much higher in this country than it is in the Netherlands. So
there's something to be said for that which is forbidden. That's for sure. I know an awful lot of things that are not illegal, and you know, kids make those choices. You know, just even pertaining to sex. I thought it was very interesting that Sarah Palin's daughter had her own interview with Greta Van Susteren just a couple of days ago. I don't know if you happened to see it.
I did not.
But she spoke up about the abstinence teaching. And she said that it was absolutely ridiculous to teach abstinence. She said kids need to be taught birth control and all of these things.
Apparently she needed to be taught it, but
evidently. And of course her mother came in then with the baby and was being as supportive as possible, but you could tell that there was just a little bit of tension there because the daughter was speaking up against what the mother had always advocated and of course was saying that the teaching that she had against abstinence was the reason that she wound up in the situation she was in.
Well, the truth came out.
Yeah. So it was quite an interesting interview. It was it really was. And of course, you know, what a cute baby boy. I mean, another trip or a trig or a trap or something. The family's names is just amazing. But they are kind of a wilderness family, so I suppose that helps to reach into the box and get out some of those names anyway.
Well, this conversation points to the fact that the gospel and the implications of one's position on law versus freedom impacts every aspect of society. And of course, what we like to do on this webcast is talk about the gospel of grace, the gospel of peace. And we also want to encourage you to join us at 1-800-436-3260. We've got a lot of good questions already emailed to us on the subject of prayer, which was the subject of our post. 1-800-436-3260. And we want to start out tonight in beautiful Little Rock, Arkansas with Doug Bowen. Doug!
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We're doing wonderfully. How are you this evening?
Well, I'm doing good. I'm just glad I've been able to call you guys and talk to you. I haven't been able to call in on the show yet. So
well,
just want to let you know that you have an Arkansas correspondent.
Excellent.
Oh, wonderful.
What's on your mind tonight?
Well, I didn't have a question in particular. I just want to let you guys know that I was down here, and I appreciate all you guys are doing. I've really been impacted by the show, by you, Mike, your teachings, and it's just been awesome.
How did you come across Michael and the Gospel Revolution, Doug?
Excuse me?
How'd you come across it?
Well, I think it was in the mid-90s. A guy gave me a tape one time of Mike, and I tell you, it just really really impacted my life.
What's your background?
Well, I was a Baptist, and then I went into a charismatic church, and I think, looking back, I see where a lot of things, I got into a lot of religion, a lot of law, a lot of things that, were put on me that I didn't realize at the time when it was going on until after the fact, you know. But I'm able to look back now and see, where I believe some things that weren't true, you know.
You think?
Oh, definitely.
What are you married?
Yes.
And has your wife come along for the ride?
Well, you know, that's been kind of an effort there. I kind of, you know, we grew up in the staunch Baptist, Southern Baptist church. And, of course, she went there all of her life. She grew up in the church. And then, you know, when I started coming into the freedom that I've got now, I started, you know, would say things to her occasionally, just kind of, plant seeds, you know. And, I finally, you know, told her what I really believe about, you know, the gospel now. And and I think she's coming along. It took me a long time to come to it, to a belief that, hey, all people are redeemed. And, you know, I've studied for a long time about it, and I've, done a lot of research, and it's just taken a long time to get that mindset out. And I tell you, it's just really freed me a lot. And I truly do believe that, all people are redeemed. They're going to go to heaven, and there can be no other way.
Jesus said, I am the way.
Now, did your wife into the Word of Faith? Did your wife go into the Word of Faith movement with you?
Pardon me?
Did your wife go into the Word of Faith movement with you?
Oh, yes.
Oh, okay, so you both have the same history. She just was raised in the Baptist church, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you guys have kids, Doug?
Yeah, we got one son.
Uh-huh. How old is he?
He's 15.
And how has your understanding that he's redeemed, does he understand that, and how has your understanding impacted your parenting?
Well, I tell you, it really has eliminated all the judgment out of my life, judging other people. And that's one thing I do know that has changed, and even, you know, my wife sees that. It's all gone now.
Yeah.
You know, I used to be, you know, pretty pharisaical, to say the least. But, I've also talked to my son, Jonathan, quite a bit about this, and just telling him, about the gospel. And I think he's coming along, too. I think it's a process, don't you think?
No doubt.
But,
yeah, it definitely is. The amazing thing is, as far as people accepting it, it happens. There is an instantaneous moment where that the weight of evidence or the understanding, the scales tip to the other direction, and you will never ever ever go back, Doug. I mean, you may go to a lot of places, but back is not a gear that you have anymore. And so just like in talking with your son, and if there is conflicting information coming to him in the household, it may take him a while to realize, of course, at 15, you're not sure you have the right to think for yourself, and you absolutely demand the right to do it all at the same time.
Right.
But she will. But your son may take a little bit of time. We've got a lot of families that their families are very united on this and in this in the understanding, and we have them that are completely divided on it. But in the cases where the parents are really together, we've seen that the kids pretty well come along with it very easily. But if your son is having to hear the two people he loves the most in this world expressing maybe different opinions, he may have to take some time to look at this for himself, and maybe just a few more years even where it'll take for him to feel that he has the right to make up his own mind about it.
Yeah.
Well, you just got to tell your wife to submit, and that's all there.
Hey, I've been telling her, but it doesn't work.
Read her a scripture.
No, it don't work.
Well, you know, it's funny, you know. This change of mind that I've had, it didn't come instantaneously. It took a long time for me to think through it and study through it and think about it. And, you know, I even got to a point where I was doubting if my whole mindset is changing, is the death, burial, and resurrection of Christ real, you know?
Right.
And I even started to doubt that, and I just, you know, buckled down and started studying it. And studying it more, and until I came to a point, hey, you know, I do believe this, you know.
Well, you know, that's part of the process, and you talked about the fact that it is a process, Michael. So many times, we've heard this same story. Somebody gave somebody a tape, and that's how it all started. That's how the process starts, and we welcome people to doubt the whole thing.
Absolutely. In fact, that is part of the process: embracing doubt. We could probably talk several weeks about the power of embracing doubt. It is one of the powerful spiritual experiences that you will ever do. The words that ring in your ears automatically is the man who when Jesus said, you know, only believe, and he said, I do, but help my unbelief. And embracing unbelief is way beyond, and I really do weigh this as I say it, Doug, but I think you will understand what I'm saying very, very readily. And that is that embracing doubt is more powerful than embracing belief. Because the freedom to doubt is the power to believe. And if we don't embrace our doubts, we don't truly believe anything. We may say we believe it, but if we have come to believe under threat, under threat of punishment or rejection or threat of hell, there is no believer. I will say this until I draw my last breath. There is no person who believes in Jesus, truly believes in Jesus, who does so under the threat of hell if they don't.
I believe that.
You can't go there. You can become a good fake believer. You can become a good phony believer. You can become a good clone believer. But your own beliefs being developed out of a fear of not believing. Doubt is indeed one of the most powerful things that I've ever embraced. I remember in my own life, Doug, even coming to that point and telling Jesus, I remember talking to Jesus and telling him, hey, now that I know I don't have to believe, I've got to decide what if I do believe. And I think you went through that exact same experience.
And one thing, too, is that was a scary place to be for me.
Isn't it frightening? Yes.
Oh,
but that you have the grace to embrace it anyway, even as frightening as it is.
Yeah, and the thought was, oh my gosh, I'm doubting what I've always believed in my life, and if it's not true, I'm, you know, Am I really going to go to hell?
Right. You are exactly right. To be able to traverse that territory after what you and I and Glenn and all of us were taught, to be able to actually walk that out, is the most powerful thing that a person can experience pertaining to spirituality, is to walk into the arena of unbelief and embrace it. It is, unbelief is a powerful thing, I'm telling you. I know that sounds really weird to say that unbelief is a powerful thing, but it's the embracing of unbelief, because there is nobody who believes as was required. Nobody believes like that. And the fact of it is that the resolution that it's not about our belief in God, that that's not the power of the gospel, is not found in how well I believe in God. The power of the gospel is found in what God and how well he believes in me and in you. Mm-hmm. And when we can separate that, there is a process that begins that is really beyond explanation. And it does take you places mentally, emotionally. Your values, everything is a challenge. And you're exactly right. It is a frightening place to go. But isn't it amazing, though, Doug, that once you set your foot on that path, you cannot go backward. It just, as much of the fears and the things that you're told, and all of the memories of all the verses, and you know that if you don't believe, you can't go backward.
Well, and when you get to that place, your heart won't let you, because it knows what's true.
Yes, I believe that. I believe that we intuitively know the truth. And
that's
once
right.
The heart begins to become acquainted with what the mind is finding out, that's a marriage that was made in heaven, for sure.
Mm.
Well, thanks a lot, Doug. We really appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate y'all. I know you've probably got some more callers. I just want to call and let you know. And I'll be calling back from time to time.
Well, we do. And you're getting the email newsletter and stuff?
Yes, yes.
And
go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I hope at some point to have you guys down this way to Arkansas at some point down the road.
Well, we'd love it. Just give Michael a call. The number is on the website and on all the emails. And it's a very easy process. It's sometimes seems more daunting than it actually is, but to start the process anyway, because that's a process too.
Okay. Well, that sounds great. Well, listen, I love you guys.
All right, I love you too, man.
You too, Doug. Thanks.
See you, bye.
There's Doug from Little Rock, Arkansas, and we'll go up the interstate a little bit there to Cincinnati. Our man Greg Ambergy online. Gregory.
Hey, I just barely hear you guys. Maybe it's me. Can you hear me okay?
You sound loud and clear, my brother.
All right,
sound
good.
Great.
How are you this evening?
I'm doing really good. This was really freaky. I sent Glenn an email and told him I was working, and if he wanted me to call, say the word baseball. Just goofy. I never do anything goofy like that. And you said baseball about a second after I hit send. I hadn't read the email yet.
Must be of the Lord then tonight.
I guess.
As opposed to all the other nights.
You have divine intervention here tonight.
That's it.
How was your Valentine's?
It was very good. We went to the Brazen Head to eat.
Oh, I thought you were going to have a big old barbecue with lobster and steak and stuff.
We nixed that. Our wives nixed that idea when they figured out it would involve them working. It was our idea, but they knew that they would have to do some work. So
no happy Valentine's Day in that.
No, they informed us we were going to a restaurant.
Very good for them.
So nothing inspired coming from you tonight?
Not really. I saw this week about man, I was at a funeral visitation and saw probably 75 people that I hadn't seen in 20 years. And once again, and these were old church friends. Debbie was with me, and the question, you know, the big question, where do you go to church, started. And so the first person that asked me that, I just said, I don't anymore. And that was my answer. And I'm sure that spread around the funeral home, because it was a very informal visitation. The guy that died was 94 years old. He'd had a great life, so there wasn't a whole lot of sadness, you know, there in the room.
There wasn't people trying to resurrect him from the
Nobody was trying to resurrect him. No, it was the way everybody should be able to go out. It was kind of nice.
Yeah.
But nobody else asked me the rest of the night. I Debbie and I were laughing. We figured that the gossip spread throughout the room within about 5 minutes, and
they were saying, "Let the dead bury the dead."
Well,
by then, weren't they?
Well, you know, you talk about opportunities to share the gospel. Maybe you had an opportunity, Greg. Want to hear about that? But I got a call yesterday from a guy that I used to work with on a Christian radio station in Wisconsin, who I hadn't talked to in over 20 years. And he had run into a guy I know, and so this guy Googled me and called me up on my cell phone. And we had a nice chat, and eventually the question came up, of course, what are you doing about church? And I had an opportunity to share with him about the gospel. And I said, if you're open, gospelrevolution.com. And it's kind of cool when these opportunities come to you. You don't have to seek them out very often. They just come to you and you get to share. And I just shared with him on the mistranslation of the word hell. And the implication for that. Did you have an opportunity to share with anybody?
Only in the way that I've been doing this Facebook thing like I talked about last week, and I wrote some stuff on my Facebook page, and I kind of encrypted it so nobody could find it unless I told them to go there. And so I sent several people to that particular note that I wrote on Facebook, and it explains my whole position on everything.
That's awesome. All right, brother. Well, thank you for checking in with us. And even though Michael's not excited, both you and I are excited. The pitchers and catchers are reporting spring training.
They have reported, yes.
Baseball is just around the corner.
And Griffey signed with the Mariners.
Oh, he did. I didn't see that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
Just happened. So you guys have a great week.
Thank you, Greg.
All right. Gregory.
There's Greg Amberge from Cincinnati. And now we have room for you at 1-800-436-3260, 1-800-436-3260. Who will be next to call? Got an email, Michael, from Pam and Sam Culver, saying they can't get us tonight. So I've emailed them back and encouraged them to call. And so I'll hold off on that email. But interesting story. Before we get into the other emails, out of I want to get to it here. Out of the Crystal Cathedral in California, this guy comes in this morning, and where is it? Here, I'm going to get to it. He walks into the Crystal Cathedral. Now, of course, the church is open, but there's no service or anything going on. And he hands a note to a greeter, and then he shoots himself. He kills himself underneath the cross of the Crystal Cathedral. And the man went to the front of the church, knelt in front of a large gold cross, reached into a backpack, pulled out a gun, and shot himself in the head. This woman is giving, you talk about a coincidence like baseball, he's giving a tour to six Canadians of the Crystal Cathedral, and as he was shooting himself, was telling them about their 24-hour suicide prevention program that they have at the church.
Irony.
It didn't work.
Isn't it ironic? Yeah, it's you know, no matter what the face you put on religion, you know, to claim. And that's the amazing thing is that, boy, the moment you claim to have the answers for people's lives about what they should do, ought to do, have to do, I'm telling you, there's just a backfire on that entire system that is going to happen. There just is no doubt. You know, whether it's Ted Haggart or Jimmy Swaggart or, you know, we're going to wind up with all these guys rhyming with each other eventually, I suppose, between the Haggarts and the Swaggarts. But it really is true. I mean, you just, I mean, that is a very ironic story, but, you know, the fact of it is that, you know, the type of counseling that would come from a Christian organization about suicide does not prevent suicide.
No, and the church dealt with another suicide in December 2004 when the church's orchestra director, Johnny Carl, shot himself. Carl suffered from bipolar disorder,
yes,
and had stopped taking his medication. And what happened to these men, Michael, when they killed themselves?
Well, what happened to them is what happens to all mankind, and that is to be whatever being in the presence of God immediately is. That is the best that I can, you know, deduct from my studies. I do not believe there's any process that takes place. I remember the Word of Faith movement. They taught us that once we got to heaven, we'd start going to school to learn about spirituality. And I remembered what school was like for me, and I just told them right up front. I said, that doesn't sound like heaven. That sounds like hell to me.
Yeah.
To go back to school again. And but none of those things. There's not a need for school. There's not a need, you know, even the guys that in, really even very dear friends of mine that embrace ultimate reconciliation. They believe that there is this cleansing process that people have to go through after death. Well, that's like saying the cleansing process for life wasn't good enough. And the only cleansing process we have is the blood of Jesus, which Paul said that was the reason he was in trouble, was that he taught that the purification of the heart came by the blood of Christ. And that's why they wanted to kill him, was for that very, very doctrine that he carried.
But for most of the church, they would say somebody that commits suicide goes to hell.
Oh, absolutely.
Now, Oral Roberts' son killed himself, but
yeah,
then he says that the Lord gave him a vision of his son in heaven. So they always come up with these extraordinary circumstances of why that type of teaching doesn't apply to their own tragedies and their own situations.
No, it always happens. And, you know, maybe your heart's just a little more open for some mercy and grace when it's you, and it's, you know, where you're not as likely to extend mercy and grace when it's not us. But that's very true. You know, we experienced it even through the doctrine of the Word of Faith movement. I always called it doctrines of convenience when we would stand up and preach that, you know, if your children are sick, it's because you've sinned and the devil is it. You've opened the door for the devil to attack you. And then turn around and say that if our children were sick, it's because we were doing such a mighty work for the Lord that the devil was attacking us.
Right.
So, you know, the doctrines of convenience, I mean, it's very convenient to say that somebody that commits suicide is going to hell until it's your own child. And even Oral Roberts, who was considered for many years to be a great spiritual authority throughout the world, and especially in America, you know, his for some reason, his heart was able to be kinder than his doctrine.
Well, that's your classic line. When your heart is kinder than your doctrine, don't listen to your doctrine. Follow your heart.
Yeah. And I think that's what he was able to do, was to listen to his heart. I don't think that God had to speak to him. I think that I believe that the gospel is in every human being, and we come to grips with it through many different means, or we get more alienated from it through many different means also. But in that case, I think that he was able, his heart was able to cry out to that which was kinder than his doctrine. And he was able, even in the midst of his fame and popularity, to embrace you know, what his heart said rather than what his doctrine said, because his doctrine was very clear. Before that, his doctrine was very clear.
Well, we've got our boy Abraham Mackey online from Stockton, California, our Stockton, California correspondent. Abe!
Hey!
Thank you very much for calling. How are you tonight?
I am fantastic.
Well, listen, while you're online, let me, I'm sure you'll have impact and insight on this this letter. It is very much in tune with what we've been talking about, and it also has to do with our topic this week of prayer. They said, "Dear Mike, first I'm going to ask that you have patience with me. I have asked you this question before, but I was unable to grasp the answer you gave me. My husband and I were members of the last church we attended for 11 years. My service was a prayer warrior for the ministry. We had a ministry staff of 5 pastors, one of which had cancer. I was told that his life laid in our hands, and it was up to the prayer warriors to save his life. He ended up dying. I have taken my prayer life very seriously, praying for hours at a time, but this was more than I could take. Then the gospel revolution entered my life and brought a grace I had never known, but it has left me with so much confusion about prayer and about my prayer life and the Holy Spirit. The confusion is only my lack of understanding. So, Mike, if you could help me out with this, I would be forever grateful." And that's from Jeannie Schultz.
Yeah, well, Jeannie, first off, you know, my heart really goes out to you because I understand it, but let me say that I don't believe that it's a lack of understanding that has got you confused. I think it is, to date, the inability to let go of your old teaching about what you know is not true about prayer. You know that what you did not work. And, you know, sometimes it really is just very good just to step back from the whole thing and just yell out loud, "It don't work." It's one of the most soul-saving things you can do. Now, that doesn't mean that prayer doesn't have its wonderful place in our lives. It means that we have to understand prayer from the understanding of the gospel. If the gospel's true, it totally redefines everything. There's nothing that it does not redefine.
Right.
This is not a rearranging of the apples on the tree. The gospel is, as Jesus said, a laying an axe to the root. We don't rearrange the apples on the tree. So I wouldn't say that what you have is a lack of understanding. I think it's just having the fortitude just to do exactly what I have shared with you. And that is just let it rip and just say out loud, "It don't work." And it is always very difficult when you have committed your life to something to let go of it because it is dead works. Now, I don't say that to be cruel. The one thing that I think that people know is that that is not ever my intention in saying anything. But it really is true that what you and I understood about prayer, because we had the prayer warriors at a church that I attended also, and intercessors. We talked about this last week, I think, on the webcast, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a powerful thing to let prayer become something very personal and defined as what you really feel that it is. But the one thing that you do know is that it is not a work. It can't be a work. It can't be something you do to get a response from God.
Right.
because God has already responded to all of our needs through the cross of Jesus.
Right.
How does that work? I don't know.
Right.
I've seen it work for people who don't believe anything. I've seen it not work for people who believe everything. This is the area that I believe we get into trouble by trying to answer for folks. You have to let prayer become whatever it is to you. For me, as I've shared for many years, prayer has really become the foundation of thankfulness, and thankfulness is my foundation for prayer. Meditation is my entire scope of prayer. I don't ask for things. If somebody asks me to pray for them, I give thanks. That's the only prayer that I know. The thing of it is I've tried all the others.
And it don't work. And if it did work, we would promote it. And we would teach
absolutely.
It. But Abraham has been in this now for many months, and we've been honored to have him participate on a regular basis on the webcast. How has the teaching, how has the gospel, Abraham, affected your prayer life?
Well, let me frame it like this, that Mary and I this last weekend did something that was so wonderful. We went and we reconnected with a couple that we had not seen for 31 years. And they were in the ministry with us back in the day. And we drove to the little city of Santa Rosa, California, to go be with them. And gosh, we talked constantly for 18 hours about everything.
Wow.
And we met some of their friends. Now, one of the things that took place, and I think this has to do with it's kind of our understanding about prayer and how we relate to God. And because I noticed out of people's mouths as they talked, and this is not indicative just of these precious people, but it's with Christians, many Christians, that we hear from them that, well, God told them this, and God said this, and God spoke to us about that. And we talked, you know, we prayed for this, and God said this. And, you know, I listened to that, and I listened to it, and at one point I said, you know, I think one of the things that's happened, and in my own life that the gospel has liberated me from, is the incessant inner dialogue that I had with God as I conceived him or believed him to be, whereas God, how's this? Lord, should I do this? What should I do about that? Or where should I go? Or all the questions. And sometimes, yes, they would be in outward forms of prayer too, but it was the inner prayer. And I used to think this is, you know, praying without ceasing. But now, I trust that God is in me, in my heart, and in my life, and I don't ask him a bunch of questions. I just go with the flow. And this doesn't mean I do everything perfect by any means, but this inner dialogue, like as if I'm talking to somebody who is separate from me that I have to contact and wait for an answer back or look for a sign, that's over. It's gone. And I can be me and know that God is in me.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
Well, I love your comment about the inner dialogue that goes on and labeling it as a conversation that's going on with God. I mean, every one of us can relate to that, Abraham. And, you know, and there are people that are very endeared to the teaching of the Gospel Revolution, and they carry on that inner dialogue all the time. And to them, it is still very, very real. But I really have come to the very same conclusions that you have. And I just don't carry on those conversations with myself anymore because I really did realize
it gets to be kind of crazy.
It was just me talking to me.
It gets to be crazy, exactly right.
And you know, there was another part of it, and which is really kind of funny now that we've come to this place, is I used to have the same inner dialogue with the devil. You know?
Yes.
If I had these bad thoughts, I'd say, oh, God, I rebuke you, devil, you know.
And then somebody said,
oh, well, the devil can't read your thoughts. He reads your face. And I thought, oh, criminy. Now, my face is giving me away.
Yeah.
It's all, in my opinion, it's to be free from all of that, just to be me, is,
wow.
Oh, it's so delicious. It's so wonderful.
You know, I tell you what, I think one of the most delightful things I have seen people get free from is their spiritual personification, that there is no, you can't look at me and see the spiritual me by my conversation or by what I wear, how I say things, you know, how I relate to people, that you see my spiritual the manifestation of my spirituality in my humanness, really. You know, I remember one time I was teaching on the glory of God, and I remember so clearly, gosh, this has been so many years ago, more than 15, I would say. And I made the statement in a church that even when I, quote, sin, that gives glory to God. You talk about getting the attention of the church, I have their attention. And so, of course, I opened to questions, as I always did. As I was coming out of the Word of Faith movement, I started opening to questions. I certainly didn't in the Word of Faith movement. You had to maintain control of the environment so the Spirit could move. So, and if you opened up to anybody asking questions, the devil was going to get loose. You know, it was this crazy craziness. But anyway, somebody asked me, how can doing something wrong glorify God? I said, if what I would have done before, if I would have sinned before and it would have brought punishment from God, and I don't see that punishment, you see, even when I sin, my life glorifies God. Because it is not what I do or not do, it's what God did and did not do.
Right.
In response to me that glorifies. God glorifies himself. And in my existence, I can't de-glorify God by my actions. My very existence glorifies God. My presence glorifies God. My failures glorify God. My faults glorify God. It doesn't make any difference. Just me, just the fact that I'm here is a glorification of God, because my existence is proof there's not an angry God on the earth. That there's not an angry God
right.
in heaven.
The existence of Christianity proves that.
Absolutely.
That there's not an angry God.
There is not an angry God. You know, and we just knew that God was going to shut down this and close that, and he was going to stand up against this. And, you know, when the enemy comes in like a flood, God will raise up standard. And I found out years later that standard that God raised up was the cross, that is the standard,
yeah.
That he did raise up the standard. And as Jesus was raised up, that fulfilled that scripture, the standard has been raised, and the standard is his righteousness. And that we are measured by the just righteousness of God, and we've been declared innocent before God. So to break through that good and evil concept that causes people to view themselves as either glorifying or not glorifying God, that's a big one. And it, I tell you, a lot of it has to do with this, as you so accurately, I believe, put it, Abraham, and that is this inner dialogue going on all the time. And I just know it doesn't happen. It happened to me all the time, whether I was in the mental institution or in church. And I think in terms of
there
mental
must be some correlation there.
I was going to say, was there any difference there?
Yeah, I mean, honestly. But that conversation in my head never stopped. Oh, my God. It never stopped. Never stopped. And then that mental illness that constantly does that, I was taught how to manage it through Christianity,
mm-hmm.
through the teaching of prayer. This is how you manage the voices. You know, when I got in the Word of Faith movement, they started teaching me how to hear the voices, hear the voice of God. And my God, I was on medication for that for years. All I got to do is stop taking my meds, and I start hearing voices again.
Right.
But to stop that, you talk about peace. And I know a lot of people, because I remember finding peace through that conversation. That constant dialoguing with God on the inside. And
right.
there was peace that came with that. But yeah. now, instead of having peace when the dialogue is correct or the dialogue, or I don't understand, pertaining to my relationship with God, I'm at peace all the time. There's not a fluctuation anymore about my relationship with God. I don't feel differently at different times about my relationship
right.
with God.
Well, I think it was right. so powerful when you talked about prayer and the gospel, that the gospel makes you reevaluate everything.
It does.
And it's not trying to fit this cause and effect prayer life into the gospel. It doesn't fit.
No, it doesn't.
And with regard to that, we got a really excellent email from our Wisconsin correspondent, Pep Washburn. He says, Mike and Glenn, I have a question concerning the subject of cause and effect in prayer. Making a direct connection between one's petitions to God and apparent answers to those petitions may or may not be provable. Ultimately, any actual connection can be deemed coincidence, or any seeming silence on the part of God can be said that it is not yet answered or a refusal from God. Proving or disproving a connection of prayer with cause and effect is inherently a personal and subjective opinion. Exactly. Having said this, can you comment on the 7 verses I have written below? Now, just for time's sake, I'm not going to get into reading all 7 verses, but there's 4 from the Old Testament and 3 from the New Testament. They all basically say the same thing, which was somebody prayed, like in Genesis 20:17. So Abraham prayed unto God, and God healed Abimelech and his wife and his maidservants, and they bare children. And then down in the New Testament, Acts 28:8, and it came to pass that the father of Putolus lay sick of a fever and a bloody flux, to whom Paul entered in and prayed, and laid his hands on him and healed him. So there's obviously, I mean, Pep's got 7 examples here, Mike and Abraham, of incidents where somebody prayed for something and it happened. What do you say about those, Michael?
Well, I don't have any controversy with them at all. If the moment called for that particular inspiration to interact with a situation, and whether it's a prayer, whether it's thankfulness, whether it's whatever it is, if it is miraculous, it is miraculous. But the thing of it is, if it's miraculous, it is detached from the act of a human being. That takes it out of the realm of the miraculous.
Right, and it's also provable that it's not according to what you believe, because in the,
right.
and the people that are in this list is Abraham, Moses, Hannah, Elisha, Peter, Paul, and Elijah.
Right.
And clearly these all these biblical characters did not believe the same thing, did not go to a prayer seminar and were taught how to effectively lay hands on the sick and they shall recover.
Right. Now, there's not a chapter on the subject. You know, there's a verse out of context, one single verse, I might add, and that is in 2 Peter, I believe it is. And but these issues about prayer, they really do become issues of the heart. And the only thing that we can advise someone is to follow their heart. But at the same time, to make a clear statement about the gospel is that the gospel has no containment of cause and effect religion, as you very clearly said, Glenn. The two just don't mix at all. There just is no such thing as the gospel doing that. Because we know in the understanding of the gospel that whatever happens already took place 2,000 years ago. If there is anything, the miraculous is what happened 2,000 years ago, not when it happens to us. And somebody might say, well, explain that. Well, I can't, because that is the realm of the supernatural. And I don't know why those things do, and I don't know why they don't happen. This is the thing that I acknowledge. They do happen, and they don't happen. My experience has been is that they don't happen way more than they do happen, but that's my personal experience in my relationship with the people that I am in close contact with.
Abraham, have you found yourself over these months certainly not talking to the devil anymore, but communicating with God in a different way with the words of your mouth? Have you still been asking for things?
No, I really haven't. There's been a couple of times where I was tempted to, and I thought, no, I'm not going to do that. Father knows the whole story. I don't have to bend his arm or anything. I'm just gonna stay in the flow. And so I really had not. In fact, when I've been with people who have gone into prayer, most of the time I see what I see are people asking for things that even if God did answer prayer, I'd say, God, maybe you should think about that and not answer it right now. Because, like, I think I might have shared this one other time. I was sitting around with all these men, and one said, oh, pray for my son. He's in this problem. And another one said, oh, pray for my son. And I thought, well, gosh, these young men that they're asking prayer for, as if praying is going to make them come out of their problems, those young men are going to learn more in those problems by learning to wrestle with their predicaments that they got themselves into or that came upon them than some miraculous escape anyway.
That's pretty good. we're up against the clock. You got anything else for us?
All right. Hey, I love you, brothers. Thanks for including me, and call us. Bye-bye.
There's Abraham Mackey. You know, that's amazing stuff, Michael. Here Abraham, I think maybe 6 months into it or so, maybe a little bit more, has an understanding that it literally took us the better part of a decade or more to come to. And it's clearly out of a natural flow out of his heart. I mean, you could even say a supernatural flow. You said one time, and we've talked about it several times on the webcast, that Jesus should have been the last teacher of the law. That any teaching of the law after the cross was just nonsensical because the law has been done away with. Cause and effect prayer, Jesus should have been the last one to pray a cause and effect prayer as well. When he prayed on the cross, Father, release them, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. And we believe that God said yes to that prayer, that He would forgive us and everyone. That should have been the last cause and effect prayer that was ever uttered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would definitely agree. You know, and the Lord's Prayer. You know, before that, which I've taught for more than 20 years, that the Lord's Prayer was fulfilled at the cross. That you can't pray Thy kingdom come when the kingdom has come. You can't pray Thy will be done when His will has been done, in earth and in heaven. He has given us our daily bread, and He has forgiven us our debts, and He's forgiven us our trespasses, and all of those prayers have all been fulfilled, and we're very, very grateful to walk in the fulfillment of all things. There are people who say that term, the fulfillment of all things, and then they talk about how people are going to have to be purged of their sins in the next life. Well, that's not the fulfillment of all things. Why do we say we believe in Jesus and the power of His blood, and then say that there is a cleansing process separate from the blood of Jesus that we're going to have to go through when this life is over because of our mistakes and the things that we've done in this life, that we've got to be cleansed, through this fire baptism? And it is all in an attempt to try to make sense of everything except the cross.
And it's also an attempt to continue to manipulate people, to keep people tuned in and giving their money.
Yes.
Because it's amazing to think, and the story of Rodney Howard Brown's daughter who passed away in the last couple of years, to think that these people continue to promote the kind of behavior that came up so short in their own lives, and then to make excuses for it, and to reconfigure the situation so that somehow it makes sense to them, it's folly. It is absolute folly. Well, we are up against the clock. I do want to recognize Pamela and Sam Culverne for writing in about prayer. Pamela recommended a book by Martin Zender called Intelligent Prayer. She says, it sounds all highfalutin, but it's full of sarcastic humor, she says. It's right up y'all's alley. Pam and Dr. Sam Culverne, who were
our Georgia people.
Our Georgia correspondent. And Victor Brennan from Calgary wrote in and said to remind everybody that Mike is going to be in Calgary towards the end of May, is it?
Yes.
May 22nd, 23rd, and 24th. And so that you folks up there, make sure that you put that on your calendar now. And, of course, we'll be getting more of the specifics on that. Well, we've got a bunch of other questions that we're going to save for the next time. We're not going to be able to have the webcast next week because I'm going to be on the road and in meetings on Wednesday, but we'll greet you upon my return 2 weeks' time. I want to thank everybody who called in. Doug Bowen from Little Rock, Greg Ambergy from Cincinnati, Abraham Mackey from Stockton. Also want to thank Joe Klein and Sean O'Halloran for producing and engineering call screening this program. Michael, thank you very much.
Thank you, Glenn. It's a good night, and I enjoyed every minute of it.
Yeah, and I think that the whole issue of prayer is such an important issue. We got a lot of responses to it. Folks, just the thing that we recommend is replace the cause and effect, the request that you have, with thankfulness in your heart that is manifested in words from time to time about the blood, about the cross, about the unity of faith that we all have. That's not our faith. It's the faith of Christ, not faith in Christ. And it will have a saving effect. As you said, Michael, it'll have a salvation effect on one's soul. And to what degree that impacts people's physiology, I mean, it remains to be seen. There's scientific proof that some kind of prayer, any kind of prayer, no matter what a person believes or doesn't believe, does have a beneficial effect, but there's no way that we can put it into a program or a we can't diagram it.
Yeah.
They're...
And we've got to say to people, the one thing I want to make very clear is follow your heart. Let me tell you something. If I was standing over a dying person and my heart was moved to pray in a certain way, I would do it. Even if it didn't agree with what I understand at the moment, that's how much I really believe that you can trust your heart. So, you know, as you walk through these things, please understand, we're not dictating to you how to or how not to pray.
Right, right.
We have no dictation to you as to what that is. And I know that there are people listening that it has just upset their apple cart, or maybe it hasn't at all, but it has certainly made them step back and say, oh, no, I'm not sure I agree with Brother Mike about that. But that's okay.
Yep.
Because this is not the gospel. These are things. These are issues that we sometimes allow ourselves to discuss and vent them. The only thing that we encourage anybody to do is, as Glenn, is what you've said, is don't try to turn it into a cause and effect. The gospel and cause and effect, whether it's prayer life, giving, or anything else,
or
it just
anything else.
Fit.
And we've said it so many times, Michael, and you've said it so accurately and articulately. These things are not gospel issues, folks. They are issues, and they're things that we need to talk about. We know that people are interested in them, but it does not affect one iota your relationship or anybody else's relationship with God. Nobody's more holy. Nobody's more righteous. Nobody's more spiritual. Nobody's more plugged in, more anointed, or anything else because of the way that they approach God with their mouths, or with their hands, or with their handkerchiefs, or anything, or with their oil, or anything else. And so, if you want to pray in tongues, pray in tongues. If you want to keep on petitioning God, if that's what's in your heart, do that. But we're just suggesting to you what we have found. I loved hearing Abraham. I always love hearing Abraham, but the joy and the freedom that is being manifested in that man's life is very inspirational to me.
Yeah, and you know, when you can put something into words that make it very clear to all of us, you know, like his terminology of this internal dialogue going on all the time, we all can relate to that. Now, whether we would speak up and say, yes, I believe in that internal dialogue, or no, I don't do that anymore, all of us relate to it. All of us. There's no one that doesn't have that internal dialogue that we construe to be God, and that is us asking the Lord this and the Lord responding that. And maybe it is, but the one thing that I'm glad to be freed from is exactly what Abraham said. I don't carry on the internal dialogue anymore. I have a thankful, grateful heart.
Amen and amen. Well, I will be on the road. You guys have a great couple of weeks, and we will
travel safely, Glenn.
Thank you, and I want to thank everybody for logging on. Let us hear from you at webcast@gospelrevolution.com in the next coming days. We will talk to you soon. This is Glenn Klein Online saying, Shalom, everybody!